I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today I'm very excited because our guest, who has been on the show before, Irene Silva Lara. Did I say that right, or is it Lara Silva?
There you go.
See, I always get that confused. But our guest, Irene Lara Silva, who has been on the show, I think, three times before.
Many times.
For your novel, one, or your collection of stories, once for your anthology, and then once for your poetry collection, the one that just recently came out.
And also once for Blood Sugar Canto, too.
So four times?
Yes.
Oh, so you get the five-time guest jacket today. We're going to give you a little smoking jacket.
And this time in person. I'm here in person.
Yes, and that's why I'm so excited, because we're actually have you here in the studio. Every now and then we invite writers to come to campus and give readings and workshops. And you gave a fantastic workshop about the Grito. We had it in the... on the ninth floor of the Education Building, which is the tallest building at UTEP. It's got really beautiful views, and it's where all of our creative writing offices are. And you gave it in our conference room, and I was in my office next door trying to get work done, and I kept hearing, I think it was you, Diego, doing a grito. Do your grito. Go ahead. Yeah, I kept hearing that. It was a fantastic workshop. I heard a lot. But then then you did a reading last night. And so anytime somebody comes into town that I respect and just admire, I want them on the show. I want them to come in the studio. So
thank
welcome to El
me.
Chuco, and welcome again to Words on a Wire.
Thank you so much. Now it's been a beautiful visit.
Yeah. Everybody had a really good time. And we have students who did all the organizing. Kalina Gallardo and Sergio here. In the studio with us also are Sergio Andres Godoy Prieto. Isn't that a beautiful name? You got to be a writer with that name.
Right.
He's the Words on a Wire intern, as you know. And then we also have the owner of that wonderful grito, Diego Rico. And that I love that name, too. It sounds like you're a Mexican pop idol or something. Ladies and gentlemen, Diego Rico.
Nacho.
Nacho, yeah. So welcome again, Irene. And I'm going to read your bio so people who maybe haven't heard of you, although I don't know if any of our listeners have never heard of you. They would not be paying attention if they haven't. But Irene Lara Silva is author of three poetry collections, Furia, Blood Sugar Canto. I love that title because, you know, I'm a diabetic. I don't know if you know that. I think I told you that. Yeah. Cuicacali. Thank you. As well as a short story collection called Flesh to Bone. I remember I had you on the show. We talked about that one. And that won the Premio Aztlan. She and poet Dan Vera, who also has been on the show, by the way, are editors of Imanimam, Poets Writing in the Ansalduan Borderlands. And that has a bunch of really fantastic poetry and essays in that. Irene is the recipient of a 2017 NALAC Fund for the Arts Grant, a recipient of the Alfredo Cisneros de Moro Award, the fiction finalist for Rojos, and on and on and on. And she's just one of the most amazingly active and activist writers that I know. So it says in your bio that you're currently working on a first novel called Nasi. How's that going? Are you still working on it?
Yes. So 15 years worth of effort.
Oh, my God. It's going to be a magnum opus, 15 years.
But short. In fact, I was having this conversation with Diego yesterday. Like, I like short novels, you know, because I imprinted on Pedro Páramo. So I was like, I'm never going to write anything more than like a couple hundred pages long.
Nice.
So this one's going to be hopefully no longer than 150 pages.
Oh, that's good.
If not, the work is going to be to cut it down to 150 pages or less.
Well, that's good because you cut down it to all the essentials and all the good parts. I can't. But think of all the time when I think about writing big novels is Borges's quote. He said he doesn't like reading big books. He said, big book, big bore. but yeah, the novel. So you mentioned one of the influences, Pedro...
Páramo and Juan Rulfo, yeah.
And Juan Rulfo. And I was wondering, what novels you absolutely love that maybe you return to over and over again, and that in spite of, even if you try to resist, it influences you?
Well, I think, actually we talked about this yesterday. I think I imprinted when I was about 12 on the Bronte sisters.
Oh, wow.
So Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights awesome. Were way up there. I've lost count of how many times I've read them.
Wow.
Pedro Páramo and Juan Rulfo, that came along in college. Toni Morrison, of course.
Oh, which one have you read over and over?
My favorite is Song of Solomon.
Oh,
but
I love
one
that one.
But the one I talk about without end is Beloved.
Okay.
So those two.
Yeah, my favorite is, I love Song of Solomon. I think I've only read it twice, though. But Jazz, I like to read over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful novel.
Something about that language. Although, I don't know, it was interesting to me how different the last one, God Help the Child, was.
Uh-huh.
But we won't go too far into that. But anyway, I love her writing. Her writing always. And then the other writer that I love, also very sometimes difficult to read, Jeanette Winterson.
I'm not familiar with
her. Because the woman has, like, her imagination is so untethered to reality.
What novels?
My favorite of hers are Written on the Body, where you have this person, you don't know who they are, or their gender, their name, or anything, but they love this woman.
What's her name?
Jeanette Winterson. The narrator loves this woman who's dying of cancer. And so in between all these beautiful sections, you have these very poetic descriptions of what the cancer is doing to her body.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the lover abandons the woman because her husband can take better care of her than the narrator can.
Wow.
So it's a gorgeous novel. And then the other one, God, it's hard to choose what the other one is, what my other favorite is. But she just has some beautiful, beautiful books.
You know, I just finished reading Tommy Orange's There,
I haven't
There.
Read that yet.
And there was a writer who came to town. Everybody knows him, Octavio Solis. Just came out with a fantastic book. And I met him and his wife at a restaurant. They took me out to lunch, and they brought me a copy of that because his book hadn't come out yet. So he wanted to give me a book. And I let it sit on my shelf, like, you know, because, I mean, I'm a professor of writing. And so, I mean, I have
stacks
of books. Yeah. In fact, earlier today, you guys saw how many books we get here at Words on a Wire. I mean, tons of books. So I didn't think I would get to it. I didn't really know anything about it. But then I started hearing about it. And he's a Native American writer. And it takes place in Oakland, the Native American community in Oakland. I just thought, well, okay, I'm going to try it. I read the first two pages, and 2 days later, I was done with it. I finished it. And 2 days for a novel is amazing with my busy life. But beautiful, beautiful novel.
I read that one, too. I loved it.
Oh, weren't you blown away by
it
all came together?
Yeah. It takes on several stories and perspectives, and then it leads to the powwow.
Yeah.
And in that powwow, everything gets resolved.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, it's all different characters. And I'm going to teach a short story collection class next semester, a graduate class on the story collection. In fact, I want to ask you a question related to that. But as I was reading it, I said, okay, this is a novel, but for the first 100 pages, you could just go from character to character, and they're all little self-contained pieces. And I go, well, it's not really a novel. It's like a collection. But then by part two, it comes together in such an amazing way that, I mean, I got chills. I thought, damn, I'm going to quit writing. But I was going to ask you about the short story collection because I am teaching a seminar on the collection. I'm looking for books that are innovative and lightly linked, you know, not completely linked as, you know, a full plot. And I'm wondering if you have any recommendations. I'm thinking right now of using Miranda July. I know you really like Miranda July, Sergio, her collection, Nobody Belongs Here More Than You. I'm thinking about using a Murakami collection, maybe a Emmy Hempel collection, who I'm absolutely in love with. But what would you advise? A good short story collection. And don't say Flesh to Bone, because I'm already considering that one.
Actually, one of the problems is, so I have this huge pile of books I need to read, and they're all published books. But for the last 2 years, like, most of what I read are manuscripts. So actually, just this morning, I was talking about...
What do you mean manuscripts?
Unpublished books, yeah. Things that people are working on.
Blurbs,
they're working on them. They need editing, whatever else.
Ooh, so all these what I'm going to send.
Things in progress. But all these things that are in progress. In fact, I was just talking about this collection this morning, which is not published yet. Otherwise, I would recommend it to you in a heartbeat. But there's a beautiful writer, Sonia Gutierrez.
Uh-huh. I think we're Facebook friends. Yeah, so it's a small community, our Latinx writing community.
But she has this beautiful connection of linked, you know, like I said, not published yet, but this beautiful collection, linked short stories, some of them, you know, brief little vignettes. But what I love most about this character that she has in this book is that it's the point of view of a child, a girl child, and of course, you know, having to deal with oppression and injustice and racism and, you know, anti-immigrant sentiment and all these things. But that little girl is so powerful. The voice is so powerful. And you see not just her becoming more empowered, but you see how she's empowered by family, even by her father.
Does she have a publisher yet?
I don't know, but she needs to find one really fast because that book is ready to go.
Cool. I'll look forward to that, and then I'll check to see if we're Facebook friends.
But I'll think about other ones that are already in book form.
Sergio, you're a writer. Diego, you said you read there. What novel has blown you away in the last couple of years, and what short story collection?
I love Reservoir 13. It's by an author. His last name is McGregor. It's after the disappearance of a girl. It's 13 chapters. Each chapter is a year in the life of a whole community. So the narrator goes, he sees everybody in the town, and you start to get like their daily lives and their very, I don't know, in English, in Spanish, it's like rutina.
Routine.
Routines. Yeah. So you get to know them by what they do. It's pretty great. I love it.
I'll have to check that out. Now, Irene, one of the things I admire about you is that you write both fiction and poetry. And I'm a fiction writer, and I, for the life of me, I cannot write good poetry. I mean, I have tried. I have a manuscript of poems, and I remember sending it to some of my poet friends, and they were so, so polite in how they told me it was horrible. And they're right. You know, there's something about poetry. I have some sort of mental block because when I first started writing, I was writing poetry and I was good at it. I don't know why I can't do it anymore, but you do them both very, very well. And I love to see how you put a poem on the page because your line breaks and your spaces and the way you play with white space, I think is brilliant. But what I'm wondering is, you also write fiction. What I'm wondering is do you sometimes think or are inspired to write something, but you're not yet sure what the genre is going to be until you start writing it, or do you always know?
I always know. But I think that's because I go to different genres for specific things. So I know, depending on what it is I'm working on or what I'm working through, what it's going to be. Because if it's you know, personal issues, my life experiences, things like that, I know it's going to be poetry because I have to go to poetry to do that. If I want to work out different problems or think about, like, how, you know, how do you reshape the world? How do you reshape your thinking about a thing? Well, then that's going to be a story because that genre for me lends itself to that. And actually, I think I'm also a very stubborn essay writer because I'm very reluctant and stubborn essay writer, because I never wanted to write them, and people keep asking me to write them. But I think I figured out that essays are for something else. Mm-hmm. And my suspicion right now is that novels are for remaking the world. I think that's what novels are. So I think I might have to go to novels to do that.
Novels are for remaking the world. Can you unpack that?
So we were taco drunk last night.
Taco drunk. Unpacked taco
completely
drunk.
Completely drunk on tacos. Just tacos. There was no alcohol anywhere. It was just tacos. So good. But I think Sergio and Kalina and I were talking about that one of the things that I find really interesting and problematic maybe is that when we write the world as real, in quotes, as it is, there's the danger of reinscribing, you know, the oppression and the systems of you know, just all of that, and making it even heavier, making it. So what does it mean then to come to the page and to try to undo the seams of that, to make reality shaky, to make us question what reality is in such a way that then we can imagine, you know, what would the world look like without borders? What would the world look like with justice? What would the world look like with healing? And it's almost like you have to upset the reality and the solidness of the world,
you know,
in order to do that.
It makes me think of there's this idea in Kabbalah, which, as you know, is Jewish mysticism, and that it states that there is 99% of reality that we don't ordinarily have access to, that we only have access to 1%, and that reality is much more complex than we ever need to know on a day-to-day basis. And it seems that if you try to write a, quote, a realistic novel, you're writing something that is incredibly limited to begin with, that reality is way, way beyond.
Because it's sort of like consensual reality. I mean, imagine it like a Venn diagram where you have a billion people, and you can only write about the part that all of those billion people agree on.
Right.
You know, instead of accessing all of this other out there.
And also, you know, I imagine it's the same for you guys when you write. I'm assuming it is. But sometimes I'll write something just following the language, and I have no idea where it's going to go. And language is not attached to matter. And matter is all that keeps us rooted in space-time. It's all that keeps us, you know, rooted in linear and chronological time. And so if you follow language, you know, it's clearly you're going to go into the past and into, you know, in and out of the future, and you're going to – but you're also going to be able to go into – I would even say wormholes into different realities, because the language can take you there in the way that some sort of intellectual chronological outline of a story cannot.
Well, and because, you know, we, for the purposes of common, you know, everyday communication, we think of words as these solid blocks.
Right.
But they're not. I mean, when you think about it, we are literally working with symbols.
Right.
So what does it mean to work with symbols? I was telling everybody during the workshop yesterday when we were doing the gritos, you know, gritos have an energy. You know, our bodies have an energy. And I think when we write from our bodies, you see that on the page. You see, you feel that in the words. You feel the body, and you feel the energy behind the words.
Right. Words create reality.
Yeah. So you think of, we're like literally working with symbols, and then you take that and combine that with the body, combine that with that energy, and then with the, you know, the experience and the expression of that person. And that's a lot of potent things coming together.
Yeah. You know, again, I'm going to refer to a Kabbalistic principle, and it's in the Genesis, where it says in Hebrew, it says, Amed Elohim Yehi Or Ba Yehi Or, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. And this is the first indication in that text, that particular text. And I don't care what your belief in the text is, but it's the first indication in that in the creation of the universe and all the elements of the universe, it starts with language. And not only does it start with language, but it starts with rhythm. You know, Amed Elohim Yehi Or Ba Yehi Or. You know, it's very rhythmic, and that created light. And
did
what
you
is light?
Did you catch that part of the poem last night? When I was reading from Kuikkakali, there's a small section of it where I reference exactly that and talk about whether or not there was a choice to begin and that the first sound was song. There's a little section like that.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the most beautiful things I think about your work is that idea of song. Can you tell us what song means to you and what it means to your writing?
Well, I think part of it is that there's the whole following the language. I mean, when you follow what things sound like. Like, even beyond the meaning, but just what they sound like. You know, the way that sound and music live and move inside the body. You know, that is something to writing that is completely different. But I think also, like, we tend to think of song as, in this culture, we tend to think of it as entertainment. Uh-huh. You know, there's dance and there's, you know, just kind of enjoy. There's workout music.
Right.
It's this thing that you consume,
right.
You know. Or people want to be rock stars and be famous and whatever else. But
like Diego Rico, my favorite Mexican
rock
star.
it's Diego Rivera.
but you know, how many other things, you know, is music, is song capable of holding?
Right.
You know, especially when you look back at, you know, our ancestry, whether it's Chicanx, whether it's Mexican, Latin American, indigenous, you know, you have all of these other ways of looking at what sound and song are.
Right.
Everything between, you know, chanting and history and connection and community and even healing. Like, there's an aspect of that is song.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of the ways that we can connect to all of that.
I have the sense that song has been called, music has been called the highest form of art. Mm-hmm. And that kind of makes sense to me, although I'm sure there's arguments for, you know, other things. But it makes sense to me, because when you enter into the landscape of music, you're entering into pure imagination, and it's unbridled. I mean, it's not, there's no, there's not details in there that direct the meaning of it, and it's just almost pure connection. And I'm thinking that in many cases, the most transforming experience of music is music without lyrics. And I know there's lyrics that reinforce what we think and reinforce what we believe. And I'm not saying that, you know, that that's not important, because if we believe in a particular a way of seeing life, yeah, those lyrics are going to reinforce it. But without lyrics, there is no message. There's only the experience.
I don't know, though, because I love
so much. I knew you were going to argue with that.
No, because I love the human voice so much. I love what singing does. You know, because you hear some people like, you know, I fell in love very early with ranchera music. Uh-huh. So when you hear these singers that you almost don't hear what the words are, because all you hear are the tears in their voice.
Right.
Like there's something about it, just, you know, goosebumps and chills to hear almost this pure transference of emotion.
Right.
You know, in that voice.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, because the voice in good music is an instrument. I mean, it is, you know, it is part of it. Like, a lot of people are shocked when I tell them that I went through a death metal phase, you know, where I would listen to death metal. And I don't mean
it's really good writing
metal.
Music. It is really good writing music,
yeah,
I was going to say.
Death metal, death metal on low volume. I love it. I don't like death metal on loud volume.
I don't like anything on low volume. I'm just a super volume for everything. But, you know, Diego asked me yesterday, what music do you listen to? I was like, I listen to everything. I don't even care. Country, reggaeton, tejano, rancheras. You know, whatever you want to play.
But one of the things I like about death metal is that the voice in death metal, it's like, you know, and you have no idea what they're saying. No idea what they're saying. And so the voice just becomes part of the genre, part of the form of the song. And so you could listen to a death metal song and know it's death metal just by the lyrics. Or by the sound of the voice, but I do so. Yeah, I'm thinking. Yeah, the human voice is fundamental. So, you know, maybe I'll retract that. However, I do believe that you know, for me, listening to music without lyrics brings me at a different level of consciousness when it does have lyrics that I understand. You know, and not a bad. You know, I'm not saying bad or good, but there is some direction in one's thoughts when you understand what the lyrics are saying, and that for good, for better or worse.
You know what I've been doing a lot lately, which I never did before, maybe last year. I'll write and listen to only one song on loop.
All right.
And I don't know why, but I love this. It's like it changed everything for me.
Nodding his head. You do that too?
I did the same thing.
It changes everything when suddenly you have one song, and like, you know, you kind of check in and you check out when you're writing. But to have that one song just repeating and repeating. Right now, the one song I have repeating is Duele from Bomba Estéreo. I love that song.
Wow.
But just on repeat, you know, just on loop. Which, by the way, in case anybody needs to know, if you're on YouTube, you put YouTube repeat dot and it'll put it on loop.
That's interesting, you know, because I remember I don't write listening to music because the rhythm of the music affects what I'm working on. And then when I come back and revise, it's like I'm using another rhythm. So I've always avoided writing music. However, I will listen to music before I write. Mm. But what you're saying makes a lot of sense to me, because it kind of eliminates that problem that I find writing with music influences the rhythm of the prose or the poetry. But then if you play it on loop, it's going to continue to influence it all the way until the project is done. So that's actually, I think I'll try that. You do that, Seth.
I do that, yeah, all the time.
Isn't it delightful? Like, I don't even, it seemed weird to me at first, but like it's so delightful.
It becomes part of the fabric of where you're writing.
And going back to There by Tommy Orange, he actually created a Spotify playlist to accompany There. And I do something similar in which, like, if I have a story, I know I have a set of, like, I have a playlist to connect me back to the story. And it's fun.
What I usually do, I want complete silence when I'm writing, because I want to hear the music within. But occasionally I will play a piece of music, generally without lyrics, listen to that, and that kind of brings me to some sort of, you know, I don't know, some sort of level of consciousness that allows me to go into the work. But I'm going to try that, because I respect all of you guys as writers. And if that loop things works for you, maybe it'll work for me and my poetry won't suck so much.
I never have silence, so I wouldn't even know what to do with it.
Oh. Well, you had this really wonderful point last night. You were saying that silence in many ways is all the collective voices, that there is no such thing as silence. And there's something really sacred about silence, and this transcends all cultures and all systems of spirituality, that there's something in the silence that is tangible. There's something about silence. And so I imagine that by listening to things and by being aware of noises or sounds, that the silence between them also is important.
I'll agree, yes.
Did you hear that? Silence. That silence between us, you know, it's tangible. But I wanted to ask you, I'm in the studio with Irena Lara Silva, a writer I admire immensely, who is who's coming through Chuco and tasting the tacos and the food here. Great Mexican food here in El Paso. But you live in Austin. Are you from Austin?
No. I've been there about 21 years now.
So you're from Austin?
At this point, yeah. At this point, it's home.
I've been in El Paso for almost 20 years. And I feel like, yeah, I mean, even though I'm from California, from Fresno.
This is home for you.
Yeah, you know, and I'll always have Fresno in me. But what I wanted to ask you is, I don't imagine it would be possible to live in a city and not have the spirit or the general experience of that city not influence your work. How has Austin influenced you?
It was a near thing when I moved to Austin. I almost went to San Antonio instead.
Wow.
And it's interesting because I think it's going to sound weird because I go to San Antonio a lot. It's my other city. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wonderful community there, a lot of poets and writers. It's always been very good to me. And people always ask me if I'm in San Antonio, and I'm like, I have no idea. I live in Austin. I've been there 21 years. But I think what Austin gave me and still gives me is I think, you know, we yearn for community. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we very much need solitude and space.
Right.
And I very much need solitude and space. So Austin gives me this space where I can be apart and develop myself and figure out how I want to develop my work and my art and my voice. But it also gives me opportunity to have community. And I don't know that I would have found that combination of those two things anywhere else.
Right.
You know, and that is what's been good for me in Austin always.
Wow. I'm, as I said, from California. And you know, California, I remember there's this part in Sandra Cisneros' collection of stories, which is, you know, really one of the most brilliant collections out there, Women Hollering Creek, where she's talking about, you know, all her friends from California saying, Texas, you know, you live in Texas. And, you know, people in California, I admit, have these ideas about Texas. Mm-hmm. And I was no exception. And so, you know, to me, Austin was kind of like, well, who would want to go to Austin? You know, who'd want to go, you know, to Houston? But when I did go to Austin, one of the things I deeply admire about that city is the music. There's just so much music there. I mean, everywhere you go into a 7-Eleven, there's someone on the piano as you
yes,
stand
there
in
is.
Line.
On the street, anywhere. There's somebody filming a video down the street by the Jack in the Box. Like, somebody's always doing something.
Yeah.
You know, there's more and more murals going up and art. And there's just an openness to art.
Yeah.
I think that is wonderful.
Yeah, and so I do think that Austin's a fantastic city to be a writer. And you've been there for how many years?
21.
21. Do you plan on staying there?
Most likely. My brother is like, we're not going anywhere else. So I was like, okay, I guess all right. Because, I mean, I grew up, my parents were migrant truck drivers, so I grew up doing a whole circuit every year. And so I always thought that in adulthood I was just going to wander from place to place. Uh-huh. Like, that was my view of the future. So it's really odd to be like, okay, well, now I've lived 21 years here, and I really don't see myself going anywhere else.
But you do wander. You do a lot of readings. You're very you know, you're here in El Paso. You said you're going to San Antonio next week.
So you see, that satisfies the wandering
New Mexico.
Bug. You
know?
That satisfies the part of me that wants to wander. I was okay.
You're a wandering poet, and I'm glad you wandered into the studios here at KTEP. I thank you for being on the show. We wish you the best
thank
of luck
so
with
much.
That novel. I can't wait to read it. 150 pages
it's
sounds
coming.
Perfect to
it's
me.
It's coming. Mm-hmm.
Sergio, thank you for coming. Diego, nice thank having you. You in the studio. I'm Daniel Chacon, and we'll see you next week on Words on a Wire.